I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
If it bleeds, it leads, on the Cut Print Film Podcast, episode 36. Here are your hosts, Jeff, Dave, and Chris.
Oh, hello there, Mr. and Mrs. Internet. It's me, Jeff Rollins. And who are you?
Your strapping co-host, Dave Costell.
Oh, and who's this guy?
I'm Chris, Peaky Blinders Evangelista.
And we are, when our powers are combined, we are the Cut Print Film Podcast.
Ah, yes.
And this is episode 36.
Holy.
How do you get that podcast?
Oh, I think you got to go onto the internet.
Okay.
And I don't know how you're listening to it right now if you don't already know.
Maybe Amish people have just tuned in.
That's very possible.
No, it's not.
Oh.
It's my alarm clock. It wakes me up in the morning.
Oh.
The internet wakes you up in the morning?
Interesting.
Dave lives in the
this
future.
Show, episode 36 specifically.
Well, you're probably listening to this on iTunes or Stitcher. So why don't you do us a favor and give us one of those 5-star glowing reviews.
Please.
And say something nice about us.
Yeah.
Like, those guys have really, really thick chest hair.
Or the middle one is sexy.
That's right.
Which one's the middle one?
It depends on which picture you're looking at.
And there are no pictures of us, so yeah. That's good.
I don't. I'm
not afraid. If I have any say about it.
Exactly. I don't want my soul to be taken. So, did anybody hear any good news this week?
No.
Well, I have an announcement to make.
Oh.
In 2019, we will be releasing Cut Print Film episode 4,600.
Wow.
What number system are you using?
We've really progressed in that short period of time.
Age of the Valhalla.
Oh. I can only assume you're referencing the announcement of superhero movies extending into 2020.
Yes.
Oh. Not the news magazine show.
Oh.
The year of our Lord.
Perhaps they will go to the year 2525 if man is still alive.
So, Anno Domini.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a bit presumptuous.
Yeah.
Because I'm on the assumption that society is going to collapse any day now. So to be planning your movies that far ahead, it seems like you're tempting fate.
Yeah, Marvel and DC have really stacked the deck in their odds, and certainly not in mine. I'm looking at this list. I have an infographic up, and Marvel is the clear. they're going quantity over quality, I feel like, and DC is just saying fuck it and releasing anything they want.
Yeah, DC is saying, oh, we want to do that too, and Marvel had their big quote-unquote secret announcement, which by secret I mean they invited the press and also the public.
That's the best way to keep a secret.
So,
I have questions.
They announced, what did they announce?
Ant-Man was an inside job, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so they announced Captain America Civil War.
It was ants that took down Tower 7?
Yeah,
is that what you're trying
to
tell me?
What else? They announced...
Wait, Gettysburg?
Yeah, they announced Gettysburg.
Wait, what?
Captain America Gettysburg.
They're rebooting the movie Network.
Captain America Antietam was announced.
The bloodiest battle on American soil.
Thor Ragnarok was announced, and which I found amusing because I saw several people on Twitter saying, what's Ragnarok mean? Which, maybe I'm just like a snob, but
Isn't that a Muppet?
Yeah. It was on Fraggle Rock, I believe.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's a sham you use to clean rocks.
It's a sham wow.
Yeah. They got a lot of sequels here. Guardians 2, Fantastic Four 2,
right.
Thor Ragnarok, Wolverine 3, which everyone's excited about.
Right. What else? Avengers 3 is being broken into two movies because...
That's what everybody wants.
Money. Money is the reason.
God, that's
money
the one
is the
that
reason
really
we exist,
me.
Like that Lana Del Rey song.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just
Amazing Spider-Man 3.
Ooh.
I have a feeling that will not happen because Amazing Spider-Man 2 did not do well. Anyway, the point we're making with all this is please stop.
That says it all. Oh, there's another sequel, Fantastic Four. I didn't see the first three, but this one looks interesting.
They're going to get it right this time.
Were there any on there that interested you even slightly?
I'm I'm kind of interested in the Captain Marvel movie because they're doing the female Captain Marvel, and I think that would be cool.
Yeah, that one stood out to me too.
I like the idea of more female superhero movies because A, they don't do that enough, and B, I would love to see the ape men out there just freak out when these movies come out and just be like a female superhero. That's how
boring.
They all talk. Yeah, is she going to get her period in the movie? I'm sure someone typed that somewhere and they thought it was
hilarious.
Well,
that's why she can't be president.
All right. Yeah, women get in fights over handbags. They can't be present. I've heard someone actually say that, and then I punch that person in the neck.
See, here's the thing. I don't know hardly anything about comics, and I'm not bragging about that.
Well, they're pictures on paper, right?
For adults, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Specifically. For the Archie one.
I'm not bragging that I don't know about comics, right, because I don't think that's anything to really brag about.
No.
But I just happen to not know a lot about about comics, and this is a lot of movies based on comics.
I've been excited about Doctor Strange just because of the Joaquin Phoenix news.
But he's out.
Yeah, and Benedict Cumberbatch would have been an amazing announcement if it happened before Joaquin Phoenix, but now it's like a bit of a letdown.
Yeah, everything after Joaquin Phoenix is sort of like,
I don't know what this stuff is. Sinister Six, Suicide Squad...
That just sounds like
something. I don't know
what the hell is
from
this?
Sixth grade.
It's a Suicide Squad. There's one called Shazam, and I think The Rock was cast in that.
Right. That'll be DC. It's hard to keep track of this shit if you don't know what's what.
I don't know what Infinity War means. That's what they're calling the Avengers.
Well, that's
movie.
When all the gems come together.
Oh, good.
I'm really glad.
Thanos' tennis bracelet. His magic tennis bracelet.
And he punches the whole world. And he can just whisper, and planets will disappear.
Oh, here's what I do know about comics. Didn't Superboy punch time or something like that?
Punch time?
Yeah, something like that. He punched reality or something. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. The one announcement they made that the Marvel made, they announced an Inhumans movie. And I know some things about comic books. I have no idea what the fuck Inhumans is. What is that? Does anyone know? No?
Anybody in their audience, could you please let us know right
please
now?
Please tweet us right now and say what Inhumans is. But
it just made me want to think more human than, okay, oh man.
Hopefully it's just that for an hour and a half.
I don't know what that is. I mean, I've seen a lot of people say, like, if you don't like these comic movies, you don't have to see them. But it's exhausting.
So in your face.
No, that's not true. We do. We have to review them.
I
literally have to see every one of these.
I often see people...
Did you think about that at all?
I see people giving interviews with actors, and they'll say, why do you want to do a comic book movie? And because there's nothing else. That's all people are making now. And I feel like... Because
it's almost guaranteed money.
Yeah. I feel like it's locking everyone into a state of arrested development where it's like, oh, that's it. We're just doing comic book movies. And I know other movies come out, obviously.
You mean it's locking...
Man-children.
Like fans into arrested development or Hollywood itself? Because I say both.
I say both. Like, when I think of a movie being planned all the way to 2020, I'm picturing someone in his 20s now going to see this movie in 2020, and he's like, I'm picture he hasn't mentally matured at all because he's been waiting all this time for this movie. And it's just, it makes me sad a little bit, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just not the right audience for these, but I don't hate comic book movies. I like a lot of them, but it just feels like
this
overkill.
Is a lot of them.
Yeah.
We are now, we're like four movies deep into some of these.
Yeah. I get what you're saying about the arrested development of the actors too, because it doesn't allow them to move on to like new projects.
Once you sign on, you're kind of stuck,
right?
Unless they reboot,
which I'm sure will happen with a lot of these.
Well, aren't Iron Man and Chris Evans out? I don't even know Iron Man's real name at this point.
Tony Stark.
Anthony Stark.
I'm thinking of Robert Downey Jr. though. Aren't they moving on after that Civil War movie?
Yeah. Well, the Iron Man 3 is not on this list, so Robert Downey Jr. is sort of out. But I'm sure he'll come back for...
Maybe they'll put Gwyneth Paltrow in the suit.
Yeah, that's what we all want.
She'll be the star. But it's also like a bit... it kills the hype machine because never have movies been announced this far in advance. Like, so now... I picture in like a year, right? We all know about these movies, and then we just don't care anymore because it's like...
Yeah, it's...
We had already known about them, where if they gave it out piecemeal, it kind of like... It pulls you in. And I foresee it at a certain point, they're announcing... The next, like, they'll be like, oh, in 30 years, we're going to make Star Wars 45. Like, yeah. it would have to keep consuming itself to
And that's what happens.
Hype.
That's what happens. The whole thing just consumes itself, and you don't care about. Now that you know that there's going to be an Avengers 3 and it's split into two parts, who the hell cares about Avengers 2?
Yeah.
I mean,
that's a great point. And yeah.
I'm going to see Avengers 2,
yeah,
and I'll probably
cool.
really enjoy it.
Yeah,
but because you know that trailer was fantastic.
Right,
but really, who cares? It's a filler movie.
It's too much of a. It's. I understand, and I'm not naive. I understand movies are a business, but when you plot things out this much, it robs it of its magic. People sit there and they like at this Marvel event as they're announcing these titles, the audience is going crazy, but. They're going crazy for just words. There's no movie. It's just like, oh, Infinity yeah. Wars. Yeah! That yeah, hasn't even happened
some
yet.
Some guy's Photoshop work. That's
yeah,
what they're going
yeah
crazy
someone,
over.
Someone's excited over a fucking logo. It seems insane to
when
me.
When I was 10 years old, I would have absolutely loved for an X-Men movie to
right.
come out because I loved the X-Men cartoon.
Right.
I would have loved that. And the only thing I had to watch was those terrible early 90s, late 80s comic book movies like Captain America
right.
and that Punisher with Dolph Lundgren. And they were really, really bad. But
and The Shaft.
Yeah, well, no, that was much later.
The Shaft.
But yeah, when I was that young, I would have loved for these movies to be made. But I think now, if I were 10 years old now, I would still be bored by all. So many movies being plotted so far. Because when you're a kid, 7 years seems like forever.
Yeah,
and that's your like, entire future.
Yeah, it's like 40% of your lifespan thus
and it's
far.
Just like, who can get excited about that?
I mean, yeah, I think the only reason I'm excited for the female Captain Marvel movie is because it's different. There's nothing exciting about comic book movies anymore. It's commonplace. There's nothing
yeah.
unique anymore. Especially, and look, the Marvel movies... 9 times out of 10, they're good movies, and
oh, they usually are.
But they're not. There's no like artistry anymore. It's just they all.
DC's terrific too. Green Lantern, that was awesome.
Even, I don't know if they are all good movies because those Thor movies are like
yeah,
you stack
silly.
Them up.
The Thor movies suck, and the fact that they're still making Thor 3 is just it blows my mind. Does anyone really care about Thor except like I guess girls like hot Chris? What's his name?
Hemsworth. Yeah.
But I watched both of those Thor movies. They're bad. They're bad movies.
Yeah,
I don't get it.
They're the ones that don't.
But if the rest of these are like kind of shoddily thrown together, like those Thor movies, that it's like they're announcing nothing. Essentially,
that's how I feel. I feel like this is an announcement of so many things that it's just nothing in the end.
But you said something interesting, like how Avengers 2 is already like not excited. Like it reminds me, you know how like a complete series, you'll be like, oh, well, I didn't even like the second one. It already gives you that feeling about Avengers 2 and you haven't even seen it yet. You're like, oh, fuck that. I'm looking forward to part 2.
Yeah,
Civil War.
I mean, there's exceptions. Yeah. The Two Towers was my favorite in the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Yeah, I'm just saying it already puts you in that mindset of,
the second
of
scary
having
movie
so
was
many
the best
of them.
One.
Oh, yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
I believe that was the one where a gentleman gets killed with a penis through his ear hole.
That was the first film, Jeff.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not
but,
to snuff
is that the one
my...
where he fucks the vacuum?
But the second scary movie was...
I think it is.
The second scary movie was definitely the scariest of the series. I had nightmares for weeks. But I don't know. I worry we come off as like cranky old men when we do this, but...
Well, these movies have been hijacked by adults, too. They're for children. And
right.
No, and
they should be for children.
Away.
They
and
should
that,
be for children.
That's what was great about Guardians, is that it had like a yeah, youthful vibe to
it. Had
it.
A youthful vibe, but it also felt like it was for everyone. Like the reason I loved Guardians so much, and it's my favorite Marvel movie, is because it doesn't feel like a Marvel movie. Other than the pointless Thanos scene where he's on his rocket lazy boy, it doesn't... The movie doesn't feel like a
it's
Marvel movie.
Ethan Allen show.
It feels like its own movie.
The Asteroid Collection.
And I felt like that was the first movie in the Marvel franchises that did its own thing. Every other movie has been like, we have to tie it in with every other movie. And that movie didn't do that. And I feel like all these movies are just going to be...
Well, it did have Infinity Gems.
Oh, did it? Fuck everything. Enough. Enough with the fucking Infinity Gauntlet, whatever that is.
I say enough with the... this conversation.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've had quite enough.
Yeah.
We're going to get a lambasting from our hardcore comic fans.
Yes. All three of them.
And you know, yeah, if you like these movies, more power to you. It's just it would be nice to have a breather a little bit. That's all.
We're not getting one.
No, we're not.
But I just don't like being inundated with it. I think that's the point. It's like it's just this wave of them has been thrown at
this
us.
Would
and now
be
I
like,
have to, like,
this would be like if westerns were this prevalent.
Right.
Would you not be like, hey, enough?
Yeah, please stop
westerns.
Making westerns.
and we did.
Yeah.
It happened in the 70s. We said, that's enough.
Yeah, that's the thing that weirds me out about this, is because how do you not know in 3 years people are just going to be like, oh, all right,
yeah,
I'm done with these comic books.
Yeah, but I've been saying that for every year, and nobody's sick of it yet.
Let's close this on that. Do you think these movies are actually going to – all of these are going to happen? Because I feel like at least a good percentage are just not going to come
out. The main ones will.
Yeah, the Marvel ones will probably happen, but I feel like a lot of the DC ones are just –
I don't see those Avengers movies ever happening.
yeah, I don't think anyone likes the Avengers, are we right?
Well, just because I have a feeling they're going to have trouble getting Josh Whedon to come on board. And
well,
then
he's out after part two.
Yeah, smart man. I think you lose a lot of the excitement, because who else are they going to get?
There's the Russo brothers.
Peyton Reed?
Yeah, the Russo brothers are who they think are going to take over.
Vince Russo from WWF?
Yeah.
But they're company men at this point. It's just like...
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing exciting about the Russo brothers. I'm sorry, but there isn't. So, yeah, we're sourpusses, and we're sick.
Sorry, folks.
We're sick of comic book movies.
But let's talk about something we really, really, really liked.
Punching people. Oh, wait, no.
I know we promised a director series on Mel Brooks this week, but we pushed it to next week. Because
we pushed it real good.
Yeah, we did push it real good.
So next week we'll be talking about that, and we'll also be talking about Interstellar, because that comes out.
So yeah, next week you got Interstellar and Mel Brooks' Young Frankenstein.
And the Beastie Boys' Intergalactic Planetary.
No.
Hmm. Oh, we're not going to?
No, absolutely not.
All right. No. Well, what are we doing tonight then? Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, tonight is that night.
Okay.
tonight we're talking about Dan Gilroy's Nightcrawler, starring Jake Gyllenhaal.
Right.
And this came out Friday night, Mischief Night.
Yeah.
And you should go see it.
It came out on Halloween. Yes.
And honestly, this is a perfect Halloween movie.
It is. It's a creepy, entertaining film. It takes place at night. That's all you need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want me to read a plot synopsis?
Please do.
Dave, would you like the slot synopsis?
Yeah, give me that one.
You got it.
I'll take a pepperoni on rye, too.
Pepperoni on rye? Sounds disgusting. Nightcrawler is a pulse-pounding thriller set in the nocturnal underbelly of contemporary Los Angeles.
Ooh.
Jake Gyllenhaal stars as Louis Bloom, a driven young man desperate for work who discovers the high-speed world of L.A. crime journalism. Finding a group of freelance camera crews who film crashes, fires, murders, and other mayhem, Lou muscles into the cutthroat, dangerous realm of nightcrawling, where each police siren wail equals a possible windfall, and victims are converted into dollars and cents. Aided by Rene Russo as Nina, a veteran of the blood sport that is local TV news, Louis thrives. In the breakneck, ceaseless search for footage, he becomes the star of his own story.
Did you say contemporary Los Angeles? Because
yeah.
I thought it was Victorian Los Angeles.
Yes, it's definitely Elizabethan Los Angeles.
Yeah.
There's ghosts and witches and what have you.
Extra, extra!
Nightcrawler strikes again! I don't know why they're British.
I was blown away by this, actually.
I
liked it. At first, it felt a little too tight. Like, the script felt a little too, like... everything was being explained a little too
much. It is a very simple screenplay, and I think that's going to throw some people off because it's almost too simple.
But
it's strange because it's Dan Gilroy's first directorial debut.
Yes.
That is not to make him out to be the scrappy young up-and-comer.
No.
Because he's married to Rene Russo, and he's been screenwriting
for
years.
The Russo brothers?
No.
Different
Russo.
And he's related to Tony Gilroy. Tony Gilroy is his brother. Tony Gilroy is a writer-director on his own. He directed Michael Clayton.
And aren't his parents famous, too?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think the Gilroys are like a Hollywood family.
Yeah, he's Hollywood royalty, definitely. And he wrote the screenplay for The Fall, which is that's very odd that he wrote that, because that is a layered and textured film, and this is so in your face and distinct.
The Fall is very fantastical, and this film is not.
This movie, like, it kind of goes through the gears like a car. Like mm-hmm. it ramps up until the final like showdown, and you're on the fucking edge of your seat
the whole time.
This was a tense movie. Yeah, I wasn't expecting that from this.
It was a lot darker than I thought it was going to be, and I knew
it's
it was dark.
Black.
I knew it was dark going into it, and again. I know some asshole is going to be like, it's dark in tone. I don't mean in color.
Yeah, it's called Nightcrawler.
Yeah, someone's going to say that, and I'm going to blow my brains off.
This is dark comedy.
Right.
Absolutely dark comedy.
It's
the darkest of comedy.
It's a funny movie. There is a lot of comedy in this film, and it's intentional, too.
The theater I saw it in was packed, and not a lot of people were laughing.
Oh, wow.
Like, I was laughing the whole time because it's just, it was absurd.
Yeah, it is.
Humor. And I just don't think people were like, because it was packed. It was average people, and it didn't seem like they were getting they were expecting something different from the movie.
It's being marketed in a very different way than the film plays out.
Like, I think that's what it is.
The
that's
trailers
what
make it
say.
Look like a sort of standard thriller, and they sort of, they also, see, I don't know if this counts as a spoiler or not, but they make it seem like, Jake Gyllenhaal's character is a hero, and he's not.
No, he's a piece of garbage.
Like, the trailers make it look like he gets in over his head and he's trying to solve a mystery, and that's not what the movie's about at all. So let's
I loved how fucking unrelenting Lewis Bloom's character is.
Yeah, let's talk about Jake Gyllenhaal in general, the character he plays and his performance, because that is the highlight of the film.
For starters, this is a movie star-making role.
Oh my god,
this is Jake Gyllenhaal really coming out as a movie star.
Right. In my review on cutprintfilm.com, I said this is his best performance of his career, and it really is.
Yeah, he needs to be at the very least nominated for best actor for this.
And he takes over. He just, this role consumes him, and he really brings the whole film to life on his own. It's all him.
And I don't say this is his best role lightly, because he's had a great run. He's a good actor, and he's usually
a subdued actor.
Right. But in the last year or so, he's had this great run with his performance in Prisoners,
which I have not seen yet.
Which a lot of people talked about Hugh Jackman in that film, but I think Hugh Jackman is just chewing scenery in that movie, whereas
he's rye bread.
Yes, whereas
Gyllenhaal is the pepperoni.
Yeah, all right, I see where you're going with this. But Gyllenhaal is fantastic in the movie, and then Enemy, which came out earlier this year, he was excellent in that. But this, but
Jake Gyllenhaal's never lost the identity of Jake. Like, when you're watching him, you're always like, "That's Jake Gyllenhaal." And this,
not in
he's
this.
So he's a different.
He's
person.
Unrecognizable. Yeah. He has these enormous light bulb eyes that are just dead.
Also,
they're wide but dead at the same time.
And
it's really incredible.
He lost 30 pounds for the role, so he's a lot skinnier than he normally is.
Yeah, he's like I said, he's unrecognizable and disturbing looking.
When I interviewed Dan Gilroy, I'm name dropping now because I can do that now.
Wasn't he the director of Nightcrawler?
He was. So when I interviewed the director of Nightcrawler,
what did Danny Boy have to say?
He was saying one of the reasons Jake Gyllenhaal lost the weight is because he equated the character with a coyote who comes out of the hills to just pick scraps.
Oh, and how they're all like jaunted,
right. And so coyotes are really lean, and they're just creepy, and that's what Gyllenhaal was trying to do
that.
With the performance.
I love
so.
That.
Yeah, I love that the opening scene is literally him scavenging, because that's what he is. He's a scavenger.
Yeah,
like
the film starts out, he has no job. He's stealing copper pipes.
And he has
a construction site.
This terrible car that's just filled with shit.
Yeah, it's like
what was that, like a Volkswagen Golf or something?
Some piece of shit.
Yeah.
Plymouth Horizon or something.
Yeah, he had to keep filling up the radiator with water. Like, that's how old it was. Does he kill that guy in the OBC or just beat him up?
It's left open.
I think he mugs him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, at the start of the film, he's cutting a fence down for scrap, and a guard comes up and says, "What are you doing?" And he notices the guard has a really expensive-looking watch, so he punches this guy out, and then it cuts to Jake Gyllenhaal later. He's in his car wearing the guy's watch. So it's sort of open-ended whether or not he's killed this guy or not.
But it also lets you know that he's very observant.
Yeah.
And
it also lets you know he's a bad guy.
Yes,
also.
Not a good man, very observant, and he's quick to tell you that he's a quick learner,
right.
And which he is. That's part of his character. He consumes self-help websites.
Jargon.
Like a sponge. Yeah, and he spits out this corporate speak. like a professional, even though he's never had a real job.
That's right. What I love. Like, you know, like the sociopaths in movies like Lancaster Dodd from The Master, right, and T.J. Mackey and Magnolia.
Right.
Like, movies have explored those guys, like the guys who have players. Made it. But
this is up and comer.
Lewis Bloom is somebody who would be sitting in the crowd and is equally a sociopath as the people on the stage. Right. Like, that's how I picture him. So
we've never seen that on film before.
Exactly.
That's a good point.
I love that because it was like he's using all that advice, and he's so weird because he's like almost not even listening to what people say. He responds with like these sentences that are just slightly off. They're not like the correct response.
It seemed to me like Gyllenhaal was playing the character as sort of autistic. Did you get that?
Sort of. The way I see it is sociopaths, what defines a sociopath is they don't understand emotion. They can't relate to other people's emotions. They can just mimic it.
Right.
And tying into what Dave was saying, how he doesn't understand, I don't think he does understand what he's saying. I think he's just reciting, basically. He's like at rote. He's just repeating what he's heard. And he just knows that's what people respond to. And that's what also makes it so funny, because he's saying things that normal people would be like, what the fuck are you talking about? But he thinks that's what you're supposed to say in these situations.
And
again, that does tie into sort of the autistic angle, you could say.
Yeah, he's like on the low end of the spectrum.
Right.
It seemed like he would go into conversations beforehand with a script.
Right,
and he
exactly.
would never deviate from that. Like, right. No matter what the other person says,
he is going to plow through to that next bullet point.
Yeah.
He's like a robot, basically.
And it was like, it was funny how you would get like sweet versions of that, like when he's the first time he's standing in the movie studio. Like, you could tell he came in ready to say all this stuff.
Right.
What is he saying in that scene? He's like,
which scene?
When he first is talking to Nina in the studio, it was weird. It had like sappy music under it, and he's like, he's touching the screen.
He's talking about how you're supposed to be really good at one thing in your life or something.
That's
like
what
that
it is.
Yeah. Well, we're jumping ahead.
Yeah.
We meet Jake Gyllenhaal, and he mugs that security guard,
and basically he's looking for not just a job but a career. He wants to make a living, basically.
If luck would have it.
Yeah, so he happens to be on one of the many, many freeways in Los Angeles.
And this one, for some reason, has no traffic on it.
Right.
I don't understand what version of L.A. this is, but...
Well, it was late at night, wasn't it?
And so there's a car accident, and the car's on fire, and cops are pulling the driver from the car. And up comes a van, and out comes
the extreme Bill Paxton.
Out comes Bill Paxton, who these days I love seeing Bill Paxton in anything.
Yep.
He was
phenomenal in these bit parts.
Right. He's having a good year, because earlier this year he was in
Edge of Tomorrow.
All You Need Is Kill, as it was called. And he was great in that too. And his part in this isn't as big as that, but it's just fun to see him play these characters where
I was sad to not see Philip Seymour Hoffman jump out of that van with him. Did I derail it?
You made me sad because I remember he was dead. But anyway, so Bill Paxton, he makes his living.
And Tony Soprano's dead too.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks, Dave.
He makes his living filming things like this and selling it to news studios. And Jake Gyllenhaal is very interested in this because he thinks this is something he'd be good at, and he's right. So,
so he steals
an expensive bike,
a cyclist bike, and pawns it off for a CB or a police radio scanner and a shitty digital camera.
A very shitty camera.
And he goes off hunting, night crawling, as
God,
they call it.
I loved that. Hell, he was just showing up at like DUIs and like and domestic
sort
disputes.
Of learning the ropes. Sort of. And so one of the things that makes the character excel at night crawling, which is filming these crime scenes, is that even though characters like Bill Paxton, they have no scruples and they don't have really morals, they're still not sociopaths. So they have they have sort of a limit, whereas Jake Gyllenhaal's character is a full-blown sociopath, so he doesn't mind
going right up to a dying person.
Yeah, there are scenes in this film where he literally puts the camera right into the face of someone who's just dying on a stretcher, and a normal person would be like, I probably shouldn't do this, but he obviously doesn't care.
Yeah, like, and he doesn't even understand that it's not normal.
Right.
Like that, that's what got me. There's a scene later in the film where the police are like, we need to talk to whoever filmed this footage. And he's in the newsroom like,
oh, that's
screaming.
Me.
Like, that's me. Yeah. I'm Lewis Bloom. Right. I filmed that. Like, he just wants the credit for it, yeah. No matter what.
So Gyllenhaal is great. And almost equally great, I would say, is Rene Russo's performance in this.
Agreed.
So
agreed.
She is very good in this. So there's an interesting dynamic between these two characters because she's almost as morally reprehensible as he is, but not quite. She, you can tell she still has her limits, but
I don't even know if she has her limits. She's just a little more of a trained social human being. You know what I mean? Like, she understands social grace a little more than he does.
There's also a great power dynamic switch.
Oh, where, I loved that.
Right.
And we'll get to that. Right. But she Rene Russo is fantastic.
Very good.
Equally as good as Gyllenhaal when that switch comes.
It's not only a power dynamic. It's like a role reversal. Yeah. Like,
so let's introduce Rene Russo into the story.
Right. Well, let's take a break.
Oh, okay.
And we're going to come back and we're going to go into more of this.
Okay.
Because I feel like we're getting a little too excited about Nightcrawler here.
I am. I just put on three different jackets.
So we're going to take a break and I'm going to yell at everyone and suck the excitement out of the room. Mm. And then we're going to come back and be really down.
Suck it through my mouth.
Yeah.
Suck the what?
Ah, come forth and let me tell you the tale of CutPrintFilm.com, a film review, editorial, and news website.
Have they got any loot there?
They do. Oh, I can't find it. Does anyone know where the loot is?
I have one right here.
CutPrint Film has a merry band of men.
Do they drop the beat?
Yes, they do! It includes More Like Radio, Joystick Jerks, and Anti-Fanboy.
That's right.
Nightcrawler.
Driving around looking for news.
Welcome back, everyone. We're talking about Nightcrawler, the official film about ethics in games journalism.
I kept waiting for him to turn blue, but he never did.
No.
Teleporting in this.
Oh, yeah, turning it down slowly.
Very subtle. Very subtle. Good production.
Yeah, good work. Good job.
So right. We were talking about Nina. That's her character's name?
Yes.
Yeah,
Nina
Rene Russo.
Is played by Rene Russo.
Yep. So Gyllenhaal, or Lewis Bloom, if you will. I hope you do.
Please don't think Jake Gyllenhaal really did all this stuff in this film.
That would be...
he'd have to go to jail.
Yeah, he'd be in prison for sure. He brings... he finds out from Bill Paxton's character who to sell these videos of these graphic events to.
Right.
And it turns out to be Rene Russo's character, Nina,
right.
who is in charge of the lowest rated news show in L.A.
Mm.
And Gyllenhaal goes to her, and she likes what she sees.
I like that they don't immediately, because he's admiring it at a certain point. And then once he realizes that it's the lowest rated, like, they don't give that to you immediately, that it's the lowest rated channel.
Yeah.
And I like
as far
that
as
about,
you know, you think this is like,
this is like
some
the
hot
best
shit.
Big
yeah.
time.
Yeah. So he sells her his tape for $250 or something like that. And he goes on to.
He gets bigger and bigger and
crazier and crazier.
It's interesting because we spent the first half of the show shitting all over superheroes, but it's almost like a superhero origin story because the more tapes he sells, the more footage he sells, the more money he's making. So he buys this really slick car and he buys all these fancy.
What was that, a Mustang? It's like a red Mustang.
Yeah, it's a Mustang. Yeah.
And he buys this fancy police monitoring equipment. It's almost like Batman getting all his gadgets. And then he also gets a sidekick, which is the character of Rick.
Yeah, played by Riz Ahmed, who's fantastic.
He's very. Everyone is really good in this movie. Even Ted Chaw from Mad Men.
Oh, yeah. That was nice to see.
Playing Ted Chaw from Mad Men.
Playing literally the same character.
He gets this sidekick, Rick, who is essentially a homeless man.
Right. So, he shows up for the job interview.
Is he a junkie? Is that implied?
I don't think so.
I got that he was homeless and just would do anything for money.
Right.
But yeah, so they meet at, I guess it was an IHOP or something.
And
Lewis spouts out this nonsense.
Well, it's like a job interview, and then it...
For a company that doesn't exist.
Right.
And it comes down to, do you have a GPS on your phone? That's the qualification.
And at first, Gyllenhaal's character says, oh, this is an unpaid internship, which is just hilarious because, no, it's not.
Because that's what we tell our writers.
And so the character of Rick says, I got to get paid something. So Gyllenhaal, I think he agrees to pay him like...
$30 a night.
$30 a night, basically. Yeah. And so...
Which 7 days a week, 210 not bucks. Bad. Yeah, it's not too bad.
Not bad for a homeless chap.
Yeah. Yeah. So they roam the night looking for accidents and crime scenes to just record, and they get more and more good footage.
Yeah. There's a shooting at a house, and Gyllenhaal just walks right into the house and films this artistic scene Was it the neighbors being interviewed or is it the homeowners?
It's the homeowners being interviewed outside through bullet holes in the window.
Yeah, and he takes this back to Nina and she...
Oh, and there's bullet holes in the fridge and he kind of moves the family picture up so it's between the bullet holes.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that even though he's a scumbag, he actually is really good at this, like framing shots and stuff. I like that
touch.
And
he acknowledges that.
Right.
Well, he gets good at it.
Right, he learns by doing. Basically,
so he takes that back to Nina. She loves it, and then he gets a little more crazy when he comes across this.
It's like a drunk driving accident.
Yeah, I think it's a drunk driving accident, and there's a man's body by his car, and he's trying to get a good shot, but the man is just not in frame the way he likes it. So he drags this body. I don't even know if he's alive anymore. I think he's dead.
Right. Yeah,
he drags this body into where he wants to frame the shot. It's just
that scene's
disturbing.
Awesome because he climbs up onto a hill and then it's almost like this victory moment because he's holding the camera up over his head and he's got his arms in the air and he's smiling and it's just like so sick but at the same time funny.
And that reminds me of another thing. His smile.
Oh yeah.
This horrendous shit-eating grin. That he gives throughout the whole film whenever something goes his way, and a lot of things go his way,
right.
It's just it goes right through you. It's like a shiver. It's this just treacherous grin.
It's a scary performance. It's a chilling performance because he's both repulsive and also appealing because even though he's doing this shit that's just wrong in every way, shape, and form, you find yourself oddly...
Rooting for him.
I don't say rooting for him, but liking him, I guess, is the closest I would say. Because there are times where I would say by the end of the film, I didn't actually want him to get away. So I won't say I was rooting for him, but he just, I don't know if it's the performance or what, but there's something appealing about this character.
I think that's part of Dan Gilroy's satire script because it's kind of a mocking the pull yourself up by your bootstraps capitalist.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So it's like the modern equivalent of that, but to succeed in this new capitalism, you have to be sick weirdo.
This is Travis Bickle if he were an up-and-coming upstart.
Right.
Yeah.
With a Kickstarter, a successful Kickstarter campaign.
But it's interesting because before you could start your own company, but now you have to really just be ruthless, essentially, to get your name out.
You have to be willing to do things other people won't do.
Exactly. And, yeah, that's it.
And the argument Dan Gilroy's script seems to be making is the best people to do that are sociopaths because they have literally no moral compass. So
that's why we're doing so well with cutprintfilm.com.
Right, because we have no
moral
compass.
I've killed numerous men.
Yes.
We just bust right into the movie theater.
Yeah.
I'm here to see the movie.
That's how we get to all these screenings. We strangle real critics and we say that we're them. Ah, yes. I'm Stephen Rea from the Philadelphia Inquirer.
I'm wearing his face skin.
Let me cut the brakes on all their cars so they can't make it.
Yeah, so that's another thing that happens in the film. So Bill Paxton's character, he sees that Gyllenhaal's character is getting bigger. And at first he tries to say, oh, come on, I'm going to add another van. I want you to run the business with me. And Gyllenhaal's character clearly just wants everything for himself.
Yeah, he wants it all.
So he says, no dice.
Well, once he gets to a level, he won't go back. You know what I mean? Because before, he would have gladly taken that job.
Yeah.
But now he's at the next level.
Yeah, he realizes he can just keep growing. Yeah. And so after Bill Paxton adds this second van, he's sort of able to get better at his job. So to cut him out of the equation, Jake Gyllenhaal basically cuts Bill Paxton's brakes on his van.
Yes.
And Bill Paxton's van crashes into a telephone pole, and then Gyllenhaal shows up in time to film the accident scene, which is just brutal.
Being wheeled into an ambulance as he dies.
I love the way that scene was framed when he's cutting the brakes, how you see the back of the Mustang in the street, and you just see the blue van.
Right.
It was like a nice split screen juxtaposition.
Yeah.
Kind of reminded me of De Palma a little bit.
Yeah, like, yeah, it was a great natural split screen.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, kills off Paxton.
Right.
Oh, and Paxton has to look into his eyes while he's dying, being pulled away with the camera in his face.
Jeez.
And so the worse Lewis Bloom gets in the film, the more the Nina character enables him, which I thought was a really interesting dynamic between the two of them, because like we said earlier, even though she's not as bad as he is, she's in some ways worse, because if he didn't have her enabling him, he wouldn't have gotten this big to begin with.
Right.
So
yeah.
She creates the monster, and then she can't live without him.
She lets the genie out of the bottle, and she can't put it back
in. The gin.
Yes.
Glug, glug, glug.
I could go for some gin right about now. Mm-hmm.
Because he's getting her better ratings.
Right.
Yeah, so and one of the things that gets her enormous ratings is this home invasion / murder of an entire family.
Yes.
Well, does he take her out to dinner before that?
He does.
Yeah. Oh, he does. Okay.
He basically blackmails her into, I won't say a relationship, but it's sex. Basically, we don't see it, but it's implied.
Yeah, it's never filmed.
Right.
But it's referred to. Yeah, I did too.
Because there's brutal, there's a scene where they go out to eat first, which is, it's funny in how weird it is, where he's basically just talking her into, you need to sleep with me or I won't give you footage anymore. And then later in the film, there's a line where he says, like, I want you to do what I tell you to do, unlike that time in my apartment, which is just fucking brutal when you think about
it. And that's worse than actually showing.
Yeah, because we don't see that scene actually happen. It just implied that there was a scene, there's an event where they were at his apartment, which is just a box, basically, that he lives in.
Yeah.
It's like a tomb.
The fact that one line of dialogue is more powerful than any scene of that actually happening could be, that is something special.
Yeah, this is a scene in the newsroom later when he's delivering the footage of the home invasion.
Right.
And that's really the scene where he snaps, because he just throws out all his demands. He's like, I want my company name on the screen. Mm-hmm. I want...
And that's where the power dynamic just flips on its ear. And he is now the one in control.
Because she keeps trying to get the upper hand, and I forget the exact figure he's asking for the money, but it's some insane amount. And she keeps trying to laugh it off and saying, like, I can't do that.
I think it was $50,000 he wanted.
Yeah, and she's like, I'm not doing that. And he literally just wants to walk out of the room, and so she caves because she has no choice.
Not only does he demand that money, he also demands, like you said, for his company's name to be put on every piece of footage that he gives them.
Right, and they have to announce it. They have to say a legitimate news service, something like that, yeah.
Yes.
And he wants to meet the anchors. And so he's...
So what he does is he gets this... he walks in on this home invasion.
He gets there before the police do.
Well, the home invasion is still happening when he gets there. And
this scene, I just want to say this before we get into it, was tense.
Right.
Was like...
Oh yeah!
On the edge of my seat, my heart was in my throat. It's nuts because the fucking gunshots were so real.
Mm-hmm. even later on, there's more gunshots. Incredibly real. But so yeah, he gets to this house, and as he's walking up the driveway, he sees two men run out of the house with guns.
Well, he hears the shots.
Yeah, he hears the shots, and then they come running out of the house with guns. They hop in their car. He gets the license plate. He gets their faces.
Yeah, he films all of this.
And he waits as they drive out.
You're all excited for it. Like, it's so weird because now you're like, shit, he's getting it. You're like excited that he's getting this awesome footage.
And you also sort of think, oh, he's probably going to do the right thing with this. But no, he does.
So yeah, he goes into the house and everybody's dead. Everyone's dead.
Except that actually the male is still alive and he films that, but he cuts it when he gives him the footage later.
Yeah, he like gets out of his car and edits all the footage on his trunk before going into the station.
Right.
Yeah. So he does a walkthrough basically of the entire house. And there's all these people, they're just dead in the house except for the guy who eventually dies. He films like a baby crib, which is empty.
Yeah, there's no baby.
Which comes up later.
You think there's going to be.
It comes up later and it shows how cold news broadcasts can be, because that's a great scene, but we'll talk about that in a minute. But so he gets this footage and he sells it to Nina for top dollar. Mm-hmm. And so then this goes in to a broadcast, and you see how a broadcast is done, where they're in the booth, and the producers are on the booth, and she's basically feeding the anchors what to say, and she keeps saying, like, play up how scary this is.
Like, hit that harder, she keeps saying.
And this is such a fucking good... This might be my favorite scene in the movie, and it's just so well done. And Renee Russo is so good in this scene because she just keeps hammering that the anchors have to play up this fear angle.
Yeah.
Because earlier in the film, she says... The stories that play biggest are urban crime coming into white areas, basically. Yeah. And that's not actually happening.
Imagine our broadcast as a woman running down the street with her throat slit.
Right, yeah.
And that is such a great line.
Right.
And it's hilarious, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she just keeps saying in this new bro, like, play up how scary it is. And when the footage is going towards the baby crib, she's like, play up that. And the anchors are like, oh, we hope there isn't a baby in this, even though they know there isn't.
Yeah,
it's just cold and calculated. And it really, and it makes you just look at news in just a totally different way.
I was going to say,
and that's when the police
become
aware of
Lewis. In that scene when the anchors are reading it. I thought when they cut to commercial, the anchors are going to be like, what the fuck?
So did I,
like,
but they are all
about it because they know it's going to get good ratings. And that's
Lewis Bloom has masterminded this into he's going to drag this out
for
all
sweep.
Yeah.
Because as he knows, Sweeps Week is coming.
Right. So yeah, he still has the footage of the actual killers, but he tells everyone, oh, I don't have that.
Yeah,
including the police.
Right.
The police interrogate him. And which was another great performance.
Right.
I forget the actress's name, but I've seen her in other things. She's excellent.
I loved this part of the movie because where, like Chris was saying, you expect him to do the right thing and be like, because your immediate reaction is he would want to prove that he didn't kill these people just to film the footage. But he doesn't give a fuck about that because he knows he didn't do it.
I think this is, I guess the Bill Paxton thing does too, but I think this is the first point in the film when I really realized how mentally unstable he was. I hope that's not a testament of me being an idiot. I hope that's more of a testament of how good the film is, because even when he cuts Bill Paxton's brakes, you could sort of write it off in your head as like, oh, he didn't intend Bill Paxton to just die.
Yeah.
He just wanted to slow him down or something. Yeah. But once this whole home invasion thing happened, that's when you finally realize, oh, he's just a fucking lunatic.
Yeah. And I'm saying, from a narrative point of view, this excited me because I had no idea where it was going from this point.
Me too. Yeah, I knew this film was going to be dark, but after this sequence, I was like, oh, this is much darker than I realized it was going to be.
So he orchestrates this entire thing for Sweeps Week. What he does is he looks up the license plate of the car that got away from this home invasion.
And that's another great thing about the movie, that he looks up everything. And he does all his research on his own, just Googling things, which I loved.
So he finds out who the car belongs to, and he gets his sidekick, Rick.
Right.
And they drive to
he has his performance review first.
Well, yes. They gives Rick a performance review and a raise.
Yeah.
They negotiate a raise. And they sit outside the home of one of the killers and watch them get in the car, and then they follow them to a diner. I guess it's a diner.
It's like a Chinese restaurant sort of diner thing. And the performance review sort of goes well because Rick thinks, oh, I'm finally getting more money. But once he finds out
what they're going
to
do.
Right. He's not about it. So what happens when they get to the diner, the Chinese food diner area?
They park right outside, blatantly right outside this well-lit Chinese restaurant with top-to-bottom glass windows.
Yeah, it's like a fishbowl, basically.
Everything's in view. And Lewis calls in a tip to 911 that the two men that did this home invasion are at a Chinese restaurant, and he gives the address, and one of them has a gun.
Which he does. It's not like he's making it up. But Rick realizes, I don't want, like, this is crazy. And at first he doesn't want to do it, but then he says, I'll do it for more money, which I also thought was great because I guess you could argue that Rick is the most moral character in the whole film.
He's definitely the moral core,
But even he's willing to be like, all right, as long as there's money involved. So,
well, he's the only one with any problem with anything that goes on here.
But even that basically goes away once Gyllenhaal's character says, fine, I'll give you the money you want. So he gets out of the car to film from a different angle because Gyllenhaal wants two different angles for this.
And two policemen arrive, and they walk in, and they act like they're ordering, and then two more come in.
Right.
And that is when one of the killers just starts open fire on the police. And
yeah, there's like innocent bystanders. In
yeah, there's a woman and her child eating dinner. And these gunshots are so real sound.
Oh, God.
I don't know that I've ever heard as realistic sounding gunshots in a film before.
No, I mean, I can't think of one because these jolted me when they're happening.
The only other film I could equate it to is Michael Mann's Heat, which has really realistic
There's a lot of Michael Mann.
Yeah, I was going to say,
this
film really reminds me of, especially early Michael Mann. There's an early Michael Mann film called Thief with James Caan, which it's set in L.A. and it's a lot, stylistically, it's a lot like this film.
Yes, I got a lot of Michael Mann style-wise and a lot of Network like as far as like
the satire.
The commentary goes, yeah.
Absolutely. So this gunfight gives way to a fantastic chase scene. I feel like more people should be talking about this chase scene because it's so well done, especially for a first-time director.
Yeah.
This chase scene is expertly handled.
Absolutely.
It's nuts, too, because he's right on the cop's ass while they're chasing the criminals.
Right. Everything, you know exactly what's going on every second,
yeah.
And that's hard to do with a chase scene or with any type of vehicle scene.
The chase scene in this film is better than most action film chase scenes, which says a lot that Dan Gilroy, who's primarily a writer, is able to film such a fantastic chase scene.
Well, didn't he work on Bourne Legacy?
He wrote it,
okay.
But he didn't.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of how he accomplished that, like what the shots were, but it just seemed fairly simple. Like,
I think that's the ticket. I don't think he was trying to
make it too. And it seemed like they actually did these chases, which makes it a lot.
It's not CGI cars.
Yeah.
It's just so the chase scene happens, and it's a brutal chase scene because the cop cars keep getting totaled, and Gyllenhaal keeps like swerving in and out of everything expertly in his Mustang.
But then a cop car in the SUV that they're chasing with the maniac in it who was shooting collide. They flip over,
right.
And Gyllenhaal just kind of pulls a Yui and turns the car off, and it's just this like eerie quiet of the two flipped over cars, and he gets out and sends he goes and looks in the car and can see that the guy's still alive,
but he says oh, he's dead.
So he calls his assistant Rick over and says you gotta film this, and Rick comes over and the guy is not dead
and he just shoots
and
him.
He's holding a gun and pointing it, and he kills Rick because Gyllenhaal knew that Rick would just continue ask for more money,
right.
And he was not about to succumb to that.
Off air, Dave reminded me of that. There's a great line delivery between the two of them. So, as Dave, do you want to go into the scene? Or
yeah, I can't remember specifically what he says, but it's not about the money. It's like Gyllenhaal says something like, "You would have tried to manipulate me in another negotiating situation
and
in the future."
Rick is lying there. And he says, I don't know.
He asked him the question. He's like, wouldn't you have? And he's like, he's dying. So he kind of doesn't care almost.
Yeah.
But he says like, I don't know. And Gyllenhaal's like, I do. I do. He says it twice.
Yeah.
You were pointing out that was brutal, like that he sends him over. It's ruthless.
Oh, I thought it was ruthless.
I just felt so bad for the Rick character.
So did I.
Because,
like I said, he is the moral core, if there is
right.
one.
And you
feel horrible.
And he's not a bad guy. He just wants to get paid, which pretty much anyone can relate to in this day and age.
But there is like another element to that where Rick agreed to this. He said he's going to go to the next level. And go the extra mile now that he's getting paid more. And Gyllenhaal closes the movie by saying, I wouldn't ask you to do anything I wouldn't do myself.
Right.
And he kind of does do, like he stands there. The guy comes out of the car and Gyllenhaal's just still standing there filming him, knowing that this guy could just shoot him, but
he
just
doesn't. Yeah. And then the police take him down.
So it's almost like he was just trying to get Rick to be putting as much on the line as he was.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because they're both standing there.
Yeah,
I see that point.
That's true.
I didn't think about it that way.
I also think that ties into a little too much of my biggest flaw with the film is that it's a little too easy. Everything lines up a little too easily.
Oh, yeah, that's tight. The stars have aligned for Lewis Bloom.
It's not even a tightness because I like a good tight screenplay.
Yeah, I
wink,
understand.
Wink, wink. But but
I understand what you're saying. Like, everything lines up perfectly. It's kind of like the problem I have with House of Cards, where everything goes.
Yeah, House of Cards has
exactly right.
Yeah, anything Kevin Spacey wants to happen, it fucking blink of an eye happens for him, and it's sort of like that for Gyllenhaal's character in this film. That it go everything goes way too well for this character, but
yeah, but it doesn't bug me here.
No,
I don't
because
know why.
It doesn't seem like
it's not as offensive as it is on House of Cards, where he works in the White House,
right,
and
everyone else around him is a dunce.
Yeah,
but
because it's still by chance, he's not choreographing
it. Yeah, I feel like he's not the smartest guy in the room, and he doesn't know that these things are going to work out. They just happen to.
It's almost like it's fate. It's almost like he's fated to succeed, basically.
And I'm willing to. It's not like the laws of reality are being bent to his will. It's just more of a chance. It just so happens that he wasn't murdered by this killer,
yeah,
and Rick was. I'm willing to lend my forgiveness for that. Really bother me.
That is a good way of pointing it out, that because House of Cards, Kevin Spacey is manipulating all of this to make it work out, and the fact that it always does just bothers me. But yeah, this it is more like just chance.
Yeah, just he's playing roulette essentially, right, but he's winning every time.
Right.
I liked that he gets away with it in the end, though. Cause,
no, yeah. I like it. I just felt bad for Rick.
So obviously he sells this to Nina for his asking price.
And now she's like totally
she's all
infatuated
in
with him.
Yeah, right. he's holding all the cards and she kind of loves it. That's what I got from it.
I'll agree with that.
And the cops are like, they're onto him, but
they can't prove it.
Yeah,
and knows it.
And so the film ends with he has his own team now, and they're all unpaid interns.
He's
too.
Got two vans with unpaid interns working for him. And he tells you what Dave said.
He's like, you could move up in this company. It's like video production news. Like the van. He's got two shiny new vans. And then it just, does it end on the Hollywood sign with the moon? I think
it's not the Hollywood sign, but the vans. And my interview with Dan Gilroy, which is on cutprintfilm.com, he was saying he equates those two vans going off in opposite directions like a disease going off into bloodstream.
Like just, the way it divides.
Right. It's just like, because the question I asked him was, the film ends with, Lewis being very successful, and do you see him getting bigger? And Dan Gilroy said, absolutely. Like, he's just going to keep getting bigger and bigger until he said, if you came back in 10 years, Jake Gyllenhaal's character would just be running his own,
Sumner Redstone,
he'd be like Rupert Murdoch, basically, just having his own
Ted Turner,
exactly, his own media empire. He'd be like Cutprint Film in a sense, having his own media empire
in 10 years. Yeah. And we'll be watching Marvel's Avengers 44. Yeah.
So yeah, that's Nightcrawler.
Yeah,
what'd you guys think of the total package?
Dan Gilroy is awesome.
I can't wait for his next film already.
Yeah.
This movie just looked amazing. Those shots of Gyllenhaal coming out of the police station.
Oh, it has a great
putting
look
his,
to it.
His
sunglasses.
Ray-Bans
on.
It's just it's so L.A. He captured.
Oh, yeah. It's L.A. noir completely, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, and because this was kind of like Drive, but I'm going to say even better.
Oh, it was better than Drive, I think.
I don't know. Because I don't know if I'd say it's as good as Drive.
I want to say this captures the vibe of L.A. better than Drive does.
This is a more realistic movie than Drive, I would say. Drive is sort of fairy tale-ish, I would say. Yeah.
But this, it was more Los Angeles is a character in this
absolutely
film.
Yeah.
Because Dan Gilroy grew up there. Right. He knows the streets, whereas Nikolai, whatever, Swedish guy, comes in
Nikolai
LA.
Tesla, I believe.
Nikolai Volkoff, the wrestler from the 80s.
I'm just so excited for whatever he does next.
Yeah, I want sort of the way Scorsese and De Niro had this partnership. I want the Gyllenhaal Gilroy partnership where they just keep making different movies together.
He already has that with Denis Villeneuve because they did those two movies.
Yeah, but I'm more excited for this partnership because I like this movie better than Prisoners. So,
is there any way we could get Dan Gilroy to direct True Detective?
I'll call him up since we're such good buds now.
You did exchange contact info.
Yeah,
that's fun.
Now, what'd you guys think? You loved it as well?
I loved it. And I'll be honest, the only thing I didn't enjoy about this movie was the soundtrack.
Really? You didn't like James Newton Howard's twangy guitar?
I hated the soundtrack.
I kind of liked it because it sounded
like 80s. Like, no, not 80s. It sounded like early 2000s thrillers.
I think it sort of gave it a sort of period feeling. I kind of think that was intentional because, I don't know, even though this film is, it's clearly contemporary, I like that it's sort of not overtly, it could be sort of an 80s movie, except for the technology.
I just didn't like that soundtrack. Yeah. And like I said, that's the only thing
I didn't notice it. It was
boring. Yeah. That's what I thought. It was boring.
With a good soundtrack, this could have been pumped up.
I almost wish this had the same soundtrack as Drive, because I think that would have been
fantastic.
But yeah,
I just wanted to cap off what I was saying. This is one of the best movies I've seen all year.
Yeah, this is definitely in my top 10. Not my top 5, but my top 10. My only qualm is what I was saying earlier, that I do think it's just a little too
neat.
Too cut and dry. Yeah. But other than that, it's Gyllenhaal's performance is so fucking good in this movie. It's so good, and I would be shocked if he doesn't get tons of awards for this. If he doesn't, I don't know what people are thinking, because he's so good in this.
Yeah. This movie frustrates me a little bit because it could have been a masterpiece. Like if some little things were tweaked, and I don't even know what they are.
Tidiness is definitely one of them.
Yeah, I think the tidiness is what keeps it from being in my top 5.
It's so close, and that frustrates me.
Yeah,
it just little more story elements that took you in a different perspective, maybe. Right. But it's a great movie. One of my favorite of the year too.
Yeah,
it's exciting. It's a great story. Amazing performances. It looks gorgeous.
Yeah. So go,
Chris. You said you liked Birdman more than this, but
I think Birdman is, from a technical standpoint, a better film. But this
I'll
is
agree
a,
with that.
This is a great movie.
Yeah, I'm struggling.
Let's just say we've had a really good year for films this year,
and these little movies we didn't see coming,
right?
Not little,
which is exciting.
Yeah.
So if you haven't seen the film, sorry, we just spoiled the fuck out of it for you.
Yeah,
but
we literally told you everything.
But go see it immediately, because it's really good. It's a unique sort of movie.
It's this little story almost that you wouldn't expect to get made.
There's nothing to the story. There's almost nothing. But it's remarkable how much they do with so little.
Awesome. I agree.
So we going to recommend some movies?
Yeah, I guess we should.
Let's all recommend Nightcrawler. I forgot that guy. I love him.
We've only done that once before.
I believe that was Fred Gwynne.
like Rob Perlman.
I broke that one out of the archives. Yeah.
From the vault.
Yeah, the Cut Print Film vault. So who wants to go first this week? I guess I'll go.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.
Iago will go. Shakespeare jokes.
I thought you meant Iago the parrot from Aladdin.
It's your dentist.
I'm Dr. Jafar.
Okay, so this weekend was Halloween.
Halloween.
Nice. Cool.
Wow. Good night, everyone.
My wife came down with a cold, so we stayed in all weekend.
She came down with the shivers because it was so scary.
She had the chills, if you will. So we stayed home and watched a lot of movies. Nice. And what we did was we ran the Dave Costel Gauntlet, the Costel 500, if you will, and caught up on a lot of movies that I missed this year that Dave reviewed or recommended. Ooh. So among these movies, I saw Lucy, which was silly. I fell asleep in the middle of it, so I didn't hate it.
A ringing endorsement.
It's a silly, fun movie you put on, especially if you have a hangover or something. It's a great hangover movie because it's just a dumb action movie. We watched Palo Alto. Which,
oh, how was that?
That's one of the worst movies I've seen this year.
I'll never watch it.
My wife and I hated it. And I had to look on our site, which is cutprintfilm.com, and see to make sure. I was like, nah, Dave could not have possibly given this a 9 out of 10. Sure enough, you gave it a 9 out of 10, and I was stunned.
We have a diversity of opinion on cutprintfilm.com.
We do.
I'll be the tiebreaker. It's not good.
You haven't even seen it.
Yeah, I'm just going to guess it's not good.
And there was another film that you saw.
I'll defend Palo Alto on our end of the year episode when I tell you the best movie of the year.
The best movie of the year is not Palo Alto.
So are you going to recommend a movie I recommended?
I'm going to recommend a movie that you gave a favorable review to, Calvary.
Oh,
well, yeah. Which came out earlier this year, starring Brendan Gleeson.
I knew you would like that.
I loved it.
He's great. He's a great actor.
He is. It's starring Brendan Gleeson, Chris O'Dowd from Bridesmaids. He's the Irish actor.
Oh, I think you meant Chris O'Donnell, who played Robin in Batman and
Chris
Robin.
O'Donnell, who struggles to emote on screen.
And breathe.
It also stars Kelly Riley, Aidan Gillen, who plays Littlefinger on Game of Thrones, and
great in
M. Emmett Walsh, who is a treasure to behold on any in any film.
That's an odd actor to be in that film filled with very UK people.
Yes, it's a bunch of Irishmen and M. Emmett Walsh, but he's great. He plays a 300-year-old man. So yeah, Calvary is about Brendan Gleeson's character, Father James, who is a good priest who is faced with sinister and troubling circumstances brought about by a mysterious member of his parish who threatens to kill him because he was molested by a priest when he was younger. And he says that he's not going to kill a bad priest, he's going to kill a good priest because that will get people's attention. And Brendan Gleeson is a good priest. This is a... He tells him he has 1 week to get his affairs in order, and his affairs could not come apart at the seams anymore in this week. It's a funny movie. It's really, really silly in a dark way.
Yeah.
It's just really strange. I feel like this tone is something that only Irish actors could pull off.
It's like weird. I can't even explain it. It's like semi-serious. I think I said in my... in my review that it's like almost Wes Anderson.
It's more Coen. I got more Coen Brothers
out
of this.
I'll take that too.
This definitely felt like a Coen Brothers movie in tone. I recommend it. The acting's great. It's goofy, but
beautiful shots of Ireland.
Well, Ireland is a gorgeous, gorgeous place, and it really pops in this movie. It's just beautiful.
While it's goofy, it still like has all this like sub-level, like a kind of like
there's a whole
meditation
lot
on religion and all that.
There's a whole lot going on with this film. There's a lot to get out of it on repeated viewings, I'm sure. I would watch this again.
And that last scene on the beach is just fucking
unbelievable.
Awesome.
Unbelievable film. Calvary.
They all go for a swim.
It came out earlier this year.
Is that how it ends?
Yeah, Calvary 2014. I don't know if it's streaming, but it's definitely out on DVD.
Oh,
election day!
Howard Dean.
Yeah, election day is coming up.
Oh,
so
nice.
I miss Howard Dean.
I'll go.
There he is.
Hey, thanks. So, keeping in tie with the journalism aspect of Nightcrawler, my pick is 2003's Shattered Glass.
Oh, nice.
So if you only know Hayden, If you only know Hayden Christensen from the Star Wars films, I'm sorry, because he's actually very good in this film. So
maybe his lone good performance.
Yeah, this is probably his only good performance. So Shattered Glass is based on a true story about Stephen Glass, who was a reporter for the New Republic, which is they talked about politics and things like that.
Isn't there a New Republic in Star Wars, though?
There is.
What a good connection.
Yeah.
Is this episode zero?
Yeah, so... So this is a true story. Stephen Glass was a reporter for the New Republic, and he was sort of like a rising star there because he had all these like quirky sort of articles. And so one day he posted a story about – and this was back in like the late
– Was it 90s?
Yeah, it was like the 90s. So it was before like the big internet age, but internet was around and it was sort of growing at the time. So he posted a story called Hacker Heaven about this guy who hacked into the NSA. He was like a kid who hacked in the NSA. And he got all this money from them and stuff like that. And so someone who worked for Wired magazine was like, how come we didn't have this story? Because we actually report on internet stuff. So they looked into it, and it turns out it never happened. So they start investigating more and more of Stephen Glass's stories, and they find out that he's just been making up stories this entire time. So none of this stuff he reports on is happening. And so Hayden Christensen is so good in this – as Stephen Glass. He just plays him as this like nervous, neurotic liar, basically. Yeah. And also really good in the film is Peter Sarsgaard. This is sort of the first time I noticed Peter Sarsgaard.
Yeah,
he
is good.
He plays the editor-in-chief of the New Republic. And he sort of takes over for this other editor who's played by Hank Azaria. And so no one really likes Peter Sarsgaard's character, but they all love Hayden Christensen's character. So Peter Sarsgaard's character is sort of has this unenviable task of trying to kick Stephen Glass out of the paper while everyone's sort of trying to support him.
Right.
And it's just, it's not a flashy movie. The movie is just people in rooms talking, but
it's so good though.
It's so compelling, and it's just
Steve Zahn's in it, and I love Steve Zahn.
He plays the reporter at Wired, who's basically blowing the lid off this whole story, and it's just it's a writer's sort of movie because it's all about the dialogue and just how it flows. And it was written and directed by Billy Ray, not to be confused with Billy Ray Cyrus. Mm. Who?
What about Bully Ray, the wrestler? That,
and he also
Billy the Kid, the cowboy.
Hmm.
He also directed a film called Breach, which is also pretty good, and it's a sort of similar film about a guy who worked for the CIA who sort of sold CIA secrets and stuff like that. But this film,
that is a good movie too.
But I don't know, this film is just, it's not like a lot of
who was in Breach.
Chris Cooper was in it.
Yeah, and that young guy.
Ryan Phillippe.
It's a good fucking movie.
It is.
Chris Cooper's always great.
Yeah, and I don't know, Shattered Glass, it's sort of like All the President's Men, that sort of thing, where it's just about journalists, but it's a different sort of story. Whereas All the President's Men is more about integrity.
President?
Yeah. Yeah, it's more about presidents and men. This is more about Glass.
All of them.
Actually, I'm kind of excited to watch this.
It's really good.
I saw it years ago when HBO was in one of their, we have a movie moods, and they play it incessantly.
I feel like it's a movie a lot of people don't know about, and they should, because it's really good. It's got a really good cast. Like, Chloe Sevigny is in it, who I like. Lots of people don't like her, but I like her. Melanie Lynskey.
I hate her!
Get out.
That was the audience.
So
I actually do enjoy her.
So 2003's Shattered Glass.
Thanks, Howard.
Yeah, you got it.
I'm going to stay on the Gyllenhaal train here and recommend
you're Gyllen over there?
A little scene film called End of Watch.
I have seen this.
I have not. I heard mixed reviews about it.
It's about two cops in, I guess,
in love.
California. Michael Pena plays the other cop.
No, they're in lust, Jeff, not love.
I like Michael Pena.
Yeah, he's great in everything. He's always in the a background character, mm-hmm. but he's a great supporting actor. Character actor, that's mm-hmm. what they call them. Like him and Gary Oldman.
Yeah. Well, so what's this movie about? Why don't you tell it to me?
It's called End of Watch. That's all I know about it. No, I'm just kidding.
That's a terrible recommendation.
It's about two cops who they run out of films to watch on Netflix.
They join the Night Watch. It's shot found footage style, shaky cam.
Which can get annoying a bit in this film.
I enjoyed it in this film. Okay. I don't enjoy it often. But I like seeing it done in non-horror because it's a trope. A technique that's used specifically in horror, overused, I'm going to say. But it's cool to see it in a situation like this because there are horrifying elements to this movie, and that's what kind of makes it cool.
It's sort of like Training Day, but more realistic. I think it's the same writer as Training Day, too, actually.
And it's a little reminiscent of... what the fuck's that movie we just watched? Nightcrawler.
Oh.
Because there's a lot of car chases and stuff like that, and them filming. He's always filming. But this also has the hardcore gunshots. Mm. I should have brought it up earlier, but I didn't want to spoil my recommendation.
Oh, good, you're learning.
We all know you're not one for that.
Much like Jake Gyllenhaal's character in Nightcrawler, you're learning by doing.
He's a fast learner.
But yeah, this movie's worth seeing. It's the only David Ayer movie I really...
It's on Netflix, is it not?
Yeah, it is. And he just did Fury.
Oh, okay.
That's David Ayer.
He also did Sabotage, which is going on my worst of the year list.
Yeah, which is why we were all kind of excited about Sabotage. Chris and I were, because we enjoyed End of Watch.
And Jeff wasn't.
Yeah, I thought, David Ayer, he's actually a legit guy. I'm excited that Arnold Schwarzenegger is making a movie with a legit director. Oh, never mind. It was shit.
But these two cops, they just kind of get too deep into it. They're not supposed to be investigating as much as they are, and it kind of backfires.
It's like they get real deep into a pint of Ben and Jerry's.
Yeah.
Sort of like that, yeah.
What I liked about
have a good cry on the couch.
What I liked about End of Watch is I'm not a cop, so I don't know what being a cop is like. But this film feels what being a cop would be like.
A little too much fake bravado. Oh yeah, fuck yeah, man, got him.
There's a lot of f bombs thrown around in this film.
I don't go for that.
Fist bump me.
Yeah, there's a lot of broisms.
All right. So what was that movie again?
That was End of Watch.
And what year did that come out? 1973, I believe.
2000.
here.
That's all the show we have for you, folks. All
right, so again, if you like this show, or if you liked a different episode of this show and not this one...
Yes, even if you hated this episode but you loved the last one...
Just go to iTunes, give us a nice rating.
Or Stitcher. Somehow, I don't know how you do it, but apparently you can give us ratings on Stitcher. I haven't figured it out yet because I don't use that platform.
I don't even know what it is. But you should also go to cutprintfilm.com, which is our website. We have a plethora of material there. Almost too much, some would say.
Yes. And a lot of pleather, too.
Yeah, so. A lot of pleather and a lot of pleated jeans.
Yes. And khakis.
Mm.
Guys, I hate to break it to you, but there won't be any more Cutprint Film episodes because I invited the Grim Reaper over.
I wonder
why would you do that?
Was silly over there.
He was lonely.
So what do we got coming up this week?
I think it's odd that he's not holding a sickle, but instead a popsicle, and he's just enjoying it.
Yeah, he told me to turn the heat off.
Oh. this week, what do we have coming up? We got Interstellar comes out.
That's right, I am seeing Interstellar this week. It's going to be good, hopefully. We'll see.
Yeah. What else we got?
Go to joystickjerks.com.
Of course you got to go to joystickjerks.com.
Why wouldn't you go there?
If you like video games, what other place would you go than joystickjerks.com?
Well, you could go to antifanboy.com.
That's right. They're more of a comics site.
But yeah. They do talk video games.
They'll tell you all about those movies we bashed for the first 20 minutes of this.
Yeah, they love those movies, and you know what? There's nothing wrong with that. Yes, there is.
You could also, if you really like podcasts and just have an endless amount of time to listen to them, morelikeradio.com. They have more podcasts than you can shake a stick at.
Also, if you're a bad website enthusiast, go to morelikeradio.com, because their website, I believe, was made by a blind corpse.
Well, that's a...
too harsh? I don't know.
I don't know what to say about that.
These are harsh times.
Yeah, that's about all we have for you this week. Next week, like I said, we got Mel Brooks, Young Frankenstein, and
Interstellar, which hopefully we will all like, and if we don't, we'll say something about that.
I'll scalp the two of you.
We're going to space next week.
Space Mountain?
Yeah.
I don't like roller coasters.
Return to Witch Mountain will be my recommendation next week.
The remake? Or...
with The Rock?
Yes. It's dazzling.
Is it?